File 2. Volume 1. Retrospect. Chapter 1. In the home of my parents. It has turned out fortunate for me today that destiny appointed Braunau on the Inn to be my birthplace, for that little town is situated just on the frontier between those two states, the reunion of which seems, at least to us of the younger generation, a task to which we should devote our lives, and in the pursuit of which every possible means should be employed. German Austria must be restored to the great German motherland, and not indeed on any grounds of economic calculation whatsoever. No, no. Even if the Union were a matter of economic indifference, and even if it were to be disadvantageous from the economic standpoint, still it ought to take place. People of the same blood should be in the same Reich. The German people will have no right to engage in a colonial policy until they shall have brought all their children together in one state. When the territory of the Reich embraces all the Germans and finds itself unable to assure them a livelihood, only then can the moral right arise from the need of the people to acquire foreign territory. The plough is then the sword, and the tears of war will produce the daily bread for the generations to come. And so this little frontier town appeared to me as the symbol of a great task. But in another regard also, it points to a lesson that is applicable to our day. Over 100 years ago, this sequestered spot was the scene of a tragic calamity which affected the whole German nation and will be remembered forever, at least in the annals of German history. At the time of our fatherland's deepest humiliation, a bookseller, Johannes Palm, uncompromising nationalist and enemy of the French, was put to death here because he had the misfortune to have loved Germany well. He obstinately refused to disclose the names of his associates, or rather the principals who were chiefly responsible for the affair. Just as it happened with Leo Schlageter, the former, like the latter, was denounced to the French by a government agent. It was the director of police from Augsburg who won an ignoble renown on that occasion, and set the example which was to be copied at a later date by the neo-German officials of the Reich under Herr Severing's regime. In this little town on the Inn, haloed by the memory of a German martyr, a town that was Bavarian by blood, but under the rule of the Austrian state, my parents were domiciled towards the end of the last century. My father was a civil servant who fulfilled his duties very conscientiously. My mother looked after the household and lovingly devoted herself to the care of her children. From that period, I have not retained very much in my memory, because after a few years, my father had to leave that frontier town, which I had come to love so much, and take up a new post further down the Inn Valley, at Passau, therefore actually in Germany itself. In those days, it was the usual lot of an Austrian civil servant to be transferred periodically from one post to another. Not long after coming to Passau, my father was transferred to Linz, and while there, he retired finally to live on his pension. But this did not mean that the old gentleman would now rest from his labors. he was the son of a poor cottager, and while still a boy, he grew restless and left home. When he was barely 13 years old, he buckled on his satchel and set forth from his native woodland parish. Despite the discussion of villagers who could speak from experience, he went to Vienna to learn a trade there. This was in the 50th year of the last century. It was a sore trial, that of deciding to leave home and face the unknown, with 3 gulden in his pocket. But when the boy of 13 was a lad of 17, and had passed his apprenticeship examination as a craftsman, he was not content. Quite the contrary. The persistent economic depression of that period, and the constant want and misery, strengthened his resolution to give up working as a trade and strive for something higher. As a boy, it had seemed to him that the position of the parish priest in his native village was the highest in the scale of human attainment. But now that the big city had enlarged his outlook, the young man looked up to the dignity of a state official as the highest of all. With the tenacity of one whom misery and trouble had already made old when only halfway through his youth, the young man of 17 obstinately set out on his new project and stuck to it until he won through. He became a civil servant. He was about 23 years old, I think, when he succeeded in making himself what he had resolved to become. Thus, he was able to fulfill the promise he had made as a poor boy, not to return to his native village until he was somebody. He had gained his end, but in the village there was nobody who had remembered him as a little boy, and the village itself had become strange to him. Now, at last, when he was 56 years old, he gave up his active career, but he could not bear to be idle for a single day. On the outskirts of the small market town of Lambach, in Upper Austria, he bought a farm and tilled it himself. Thus, at the end of a long and hard-working career, he came back to the life which his father had led. It was at this period that I first began to have ideals of my own. I spent a good deal of time scampering about in the open, on the long road from school, and mixing up with some of the roughest of the boys, which caused my mother many anxious moments. All this tended to make me something quite the reverse of a stay-at-home. I gave scarcely any serious thought to the question of choosing a vocation in life, but I was certainly quite out of sympathy with the kind of career which my father had followed. I think that an inborn talent for speaking now began to develop and take shape during the more or less strenuous arguments which I used to have with my comrades. I had become a juvenile ringleader, who learned well and easily at school, but was rather difficult to manage. In my free time, I practiced singing in the choir of the monastery church at Lambach, and thus it happened that I was placed in a very favourable position to be emotionally impressed again and again by the magnificent splendour of ecclesiastical ceremonial. What could be more natural for me than to look upon the abbot as representing the highest human ideal worth striving for, just as the position of the humble village priest had appeared to my father in his own boyhood days. At least, that was my idea for a while. But the juvenile disputes I had with my father did not lead him to appreciate his son's oratorical gifts in such a way as to see them in a favourable promise for such a career, and so he naturally could not understand the boyish ideas I had in my head at that time. This contradiction in my character made him feel somewhat anxious. As a matter of fact, that transitory yearning after such a vocation soon gave way to hopes that were better suited to my temperament. Browsing through my father's books, I chanced to come across some publications that dealt with military subjects. One of these publications was a popular history of the Franco-German War of 1870-71. It consisted of two volumes of an illustrated periodical dating from those years. These became my favorite reading. In a little while, that great and heroic conflict began to take first place in my mind, and from that time onwards I became more and more enthusiastic about everything that was in any way connected with war or military affairs. But this story of the Franco-German War had a special significance for me on other grounds also. For the first time, and as yet only in quite a vague way, the question began to present itself: is there a difference, and if there be, what is it, between the Germans who fought that war and the other Germans? Why did not Austria also take part in it? Why did not my father and all the others fight in that struggle? Are we not the same as the other Germans? Do we not all belong together? That was the first time that this problem began to agitate my small brain, and from the replies that were given to the questions which I asked very tentatively, I was forced to accept the fact, though with a secret envy, that not all Germans had the good luck to belong to Bismarck's empire. This was something that I could not understand. It was decided that I should study. Considering my character as a whole, and especially my temperament, my father decided that the classical subjects studied at the Lyceum were not suited to my natural talents. He thought that the Realschule would suit me better. My obvious talent for drawing confirmed him in that view, for in his opinion, drawing was a subject too much neglected in the Austrian gymnasium. Probably also the memory of the hard road which he himself had travelled contributed to make him look upon classical studies as unpractical, and accordingly to set little value on them. At the back of his mind, he had the idea that his son should also become an official of the government. Indeed, he had decided on that career for me. The difficulties through which he had had to struggle in making his own career led him to overestimate what he had achieved, because this was exclusively the result of his own indefatigable industry and energy. The characteristic pride of the self-made man urged him towards the idea that his son should follow in the same calling, and if possible, rise to a higher position in it. Moreover, this idea was strengthened by the consideration that the results of his own life's industry had placed him in a position to facilitate his son's advancement in the same career. He was simply incapable of imagining that I might reject what had meant everything in life to him. My father's decision was simple, definite, clear, and, in his eyes, it was something to be taken for granted. A man of such a nature, who had become an autocrat by reason of his own hard struggle for existence, could not think of allowing inexperience and irresponsible young fellows to choose their own careers. To act in such a way, where the future of his own son was concerned, would have been a grave and reprehensible weakness in the exercise of parental authority and responsibility, something utterly incompatible with his characteristic sense of duty. And yet, it had to be otherwise. For the first time in my life, I was then 11 years old, I felt myself forced into open opposition. No matter how hard and determined my father might be about putting his own plans and opinions into action, his son was no less obstinate in refusing to accept ideas on which he set little or no value. I would not become a civil servant. No amount of persuasion and no amount of grave warnings could break down that opposition. I would not become a state official, not on any account. All the attempts which my father made to arouse in me a love or liking for that profession by picturing his own career for me had only the opposite effect. It nauseated me to think that one day I might be fettered to an office stool, that I could not dispose of my own time, but would be forced to spend the whole of my life filling out forms. One can imagine what kind of thoughts such a prospect awakened in the mind of a young fellow who was by no means what is called a good boy in the current sense of that term. The ridiculously easy school tasks which we were given made it possible for me to spend far more time in the open air than at home. Today, when my political opponents pry into my life with diligent scrutiny, as far back as the days of my boyhood, so as finally to be able to prove what disreputable tricks this Hitler was accustomed to in his young days, I thank heaven that I can look back to those happy days and find the memory of them helpful. The fields and woods were then the terrain on which all disputes were fought out.